Hello and welcome back everyone to another episode of Crime with Holly. It's your girl Holly and today is Monday, which means another missing Monday for you. It has been a hot minute since I have been able to put out a new Missing Monday episode, and I'm so sorry because I know so many of you are so passionate about the Missing Monday episodes that I do. I am also very passionate and I hate that I haven't been able to do as many as I used to. If you're new to the podcast, Missing Mondays is a segment that was created to help keep missing persons' name and information in the media the best that I can, and to hopefully help aid in their return home. My goal and my mission with Missing Mondays is not only to keep these names and stories out in the media and to let people know that these people are missing, but it's also to let the families know that their loved one will not be forgotten. Oftentimes, when the hype of a missing person's case dies down and people go back to their regular lives, the families are left feeling forgotten. I want them to know that to me and my listeners here at Crime with Holly, their loved one matters. Often with these cases, the information can be pretty limited, but no matter how little or how much information is available to share, I think they are all equally important to talk about because someone out there somewhere knows something. But before we dive into all of the details, I do have a Patreon shout out to give. Shout out to our newest Patreon member, Jenny, coming in hot and choosing the ad-free life like a true crime VIP. Around here, we consider interruptions a crime, and you just solved it. Thank you so much for supporting Crime with Holly and my passion to share these stories. It means the world. I cannot put it into words how much it means to me. If y'all want to be like Jenny, you can join my true crime fam for just $2 a month and drop all of those pesky ads. Visit www.patreon.com/crimewithholly to join or check the link in the episode description. Thanks again, Jenny, for making me feel like a million bucks. The only other announcement that I want to just quickly give is that May 13th is rapidly approaching, and that will be Corey Richen's sentencing date. Corey's attorney tried to file a motion to get sentencing delayed for a month, but the judge denied that motion. May 13th is incredibly significant because not only will Corey find out if she gets life without the possibility of parole, but May 13th would have been Eric Richen's birthday. I feel like it's poetic justice having it scheduled on this day, and I absolutely love Judge Richard Mrazek, but even more now that he denied this motion from the defense. Anywho, guys, let's get down to business and get to the real reason why y'all are here. Today's episode is on the disappearance of Dulce Alves. Dulce Marie Alves was born on April 25th, 2014 in Bridgeton, New Jersey to her mother, Noema Alves Perez. From what I can find, Dulce's biological father, Edgar Perez, wasn't really in the picture early on. In fact, he didn't even really believe that Dulce was his daughter when she was first born. But according to reporting from NBC Philadelphia, Noema later said that when Edgar saw Dulce as she got older, he noticed a strong resemblance and began to believe that she was actually his child. At that point, he allegedly said that he wanted to fight for custody, though whether he ever followed through with that isn't exactly clear. Noema was very young when she became a mom. She was just 14 years old when Dulce was born. 2 years later, she had her second child, Manuel. Both children primarily lived with their grandparents in Bridgeton, while Noemma lived nearby in her own apartment. It seems like custody was shared between Noemma and her parents, though the exact details aren't fully known. What is clear, though, is that Dulce and Manuel were cared for, and their grandparents played a very active role in their lives. Fast forward to September 16th, 2019. Dulce was an energetic, excited 5-year-old who had just started kindergarten at Buckshuttum Road Elementary School. That day began like any other day. She went to school that morning, and later Noemma picked up Dulce and her younger brother Manuel and Noemma's younger sister. After school, they stopped at a gas station where each of the kids got to pick out an ice cream, a small, normal moment that was actually captured on surveillance footage. In that video, Dulce is wearing a yellow t-shirt with an elephant on the front, black and white floral pants, and little white-heeled sandals. From there, they headed to Bridgeton City Park. When they arrived, Noemma parked near the basketball courts. Dulce and her 3-year-old brother got out of the car and ran toward the playground about 200 feet away. Noemma stayed back in the car with her younger sister, who was working on homework while she scratched off lottery tickets that she had just purchased. Noemma later said that she was watching the kids and that most of the playground was visible from where she was sitting. Now, I do want to acknowledge something here because this case has come with a lot of public criticism. Many people feel that Noemma should have been right there at the playground with the kids, not sitting in the car. And I'll be honest, I probably would have been right next to my kids and not in the car. But I also know I'm a little bit of a hovering kind of mom, and I live and breathe true crime every single day. I've spent years studying predators between school, my degree, and just being immersed in true crime every single day. I feel hyper aware of the dangers that exist. And because of that, yeah, I'd probably be considered a bit of a helicopter mom. But not everyone operates from that same mindset. And regardless of opinions, this case has come with a lot of criticism toward Noemma. Many people believe that she should have been right there with the kids at the playground. But at the end of the day, I think it's safe to say that whatever choices were made that day, she has to live with them now. And I'm not here to place any kind of blame. From Noemma's perspective, the park likely felt safe. There weren't many people around, and for the most part, the playground was within her line of sight from where she was parked near the basketball courts. But there was one exception: the swing set. There was a hill that partially blocked her view of that area, meaning if the kids were over there, she wasn't going to be able to see them very well. At one point, Noemma realized that she hadn't seen Dulce and her little brother for about 5 to 10 minutes. She assumed that they had just wandered over to the swings. But as more time passed and they didn't come back into view, that's when things started to feel off. So Noemma and her little sister got out of the car and walked toward the playground. And when they got closer, they saw Manuel standing there crying with his ice cream on the ground. At first, Noemma thought that he was just upset because he dropped his ice cream. But then she started looking around and Dulce wasn't there. She immediately asked Manuel where his sister was, and he pointed off toward a set of nearby utility buildings, these structures typically used by the city to store things like lawn equipment. And just beyond those buildings, there was a path that led out to the street. Now, this park had two entrances, one where Noemma initially drove in and another near those buildings. And I know this might be a little bit hard to picture as I'm explaining it, so if you want a better visual, make sure that you are in my Crime with Holly podcast discussion group on Facebook and follow along on Instagram at CrimeaHolly. I'll have photos posted so you can really understand the layout. But back in that moment, Manuel is only 3 years old. He's pointing, but he can't fully explain what he saw or what happened. Noemma runs towards those buildings, calling out Dulce's name, searching the area, and nothing. At first, she's trying really hard to stay calm, thinking maybe Dulce is playing, maybe she's hiding, maybe this is a game to her. But as the seconds turned into minutes and there is still no sign of her, that's when panic starts to set in and Noema makes the call. NJ.com actually shared the full 911 call on YouTube. It's about 4 minutes long. I'm going to play that for you now so that you guys can hear in real time exactly what Noema was experiencing in that moment.
Emergency.
I can't find my daughter.
Okay, when was the last time you seen her?
We were there at the park and people said that somebody took her.
Okay. How old is she?
She's 5 years old.
Okay, and what park are you at?
Here in Bridgeton Park.
Okay, where at in the Bridgeton Park are you?
The one with the basketball court where high school is.
Okay, so you're at the basketball courts behind the high school?
Yes.
Okay. And what was she seen last wearing?
She was wearing, give me a second. I don't remember what clothes she was wearing, but she was wearing, I just remember her pants. She was wearing like a flowery pants. Some white heels.
Okay. Hi, ma'am. Stay in the line. I'm going to turn you over to the police, okay? And you said she was 5, correct?
Yes.
All right.
Hello, ma'am?
Hello.
Hi, did you see which direction your child went?
No, we were in the car. She came down with my son. They were running to the park. And then me and my sister, we came down. But when we got here at the park, she wasn't here. They said that my son was just crying with his ice cream. Because somebody threw his ice cream in the floor and my daughter just ran away.
All right. You didn't see anyone else around there that she could possibly have went with?
No, not that I know of. Because we didn't saw no one. There's just some other people that they're here that said that they saw her running through some houses in the back. And they said that they saw two men. They saw a black guy and they saw a Mexican man with two kids.
Who's saying that they saw them?
But there's people here in the basketball court that they saw her. They said that they saw her running.
They're saying that there's people there at the basketball court that they saw her running through some houses with two black males. She's light-skinned, Spanish. And what color top does she have on?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Because it's always down at the basketball court.
Are you at the basketball court?
Yes, I'm right here right now.
That's affirmed. She says that she's at the basketball court. And do you have your son with you, or is your son?
No, I have my son with me. They say he was crying when we found him. He was just standing there crying.
Oh, he was standing there crying. So who? You said that the black males took his ice cream?
No, they threw it in the floor.
So the male took his ice cream and threw it on the floor, and then they left with your daughter?
Probably, because I didn't saw it. When we came in and looked for her, we were looking everywhere for her.
She said that her son was at the basketball court with her daughter, that there was two black males that took her son's ice cream and threw it on the ground and left with her daughter. Okay, well, we have the officers.
She's at the basketball court on Mayor Aiken.
Are you on Mayor Aiken?
I already have an officer here.
Okay. All right, we'll speak with the police, ma'am, okay?
Okay.
As you heard right from the beginning of that call, Noema is struggling to keep her composure, trying to answer questions while clearly panicking. And during that call, she also mentions that some girls near the basketball court reported seeing two men in the area, one described as a black male and the other as a Hispanic male. According to reporting from Philly Voice, investigators later learned that a red van with tinted windows had been seen pulling up near those utility buildings around 4:20 p.m. And this is where things get chilling. That van was reportedly seen arriving right around the same time Dulce was running in that direction. Investigators believe it's possible that one of the individuals in that area may have led Dulce straight to that van. A description was released of one of the men. He was described as a light-skinned male, somewhere between 5'6" and 5'8", with a thin build. He had no facial hair, noticeable acne, and was reportedly wearing orange sneakers, red pants, and a black shirt. But beyond that, there wasn't much to go on. When police arrived, they immediately began searching the area, but they found nothing belonging to Dulce. No clothing, no items, nothing to indicate where she may have gone. They pulled surveillance footage from nearby areas, and Dulce never appeared on any of it. Canine units were brought in to track her scent, but that too led nowhere. It was as if she had simply vanished into thin air. The following day, after continued searching and interviews, authorities issued an Amber Alert around 10 p.m. And for Noema, nothing about this made sense. She had always taught Dulce not to talk to strangers, to scream if anyone ever tried to take her. She described Dulce as a very smart little girl, one who understood those dangers. She truly didn't believe that her daughter would have willingly gone with anyone. As news spread, the Bridgeton community rallied fast. People showed up in large numbers to search the park, an area that's not small, surrounded by trees and open space. Just 2 days after Dulce disappeared, a vigil was held right there at the park, and once again, the turnout was overwhelming. People came together to pray, to support the family, and to keep Dulce's name alive. Flyers were posted everywhere, and it felt like everyone in Bridgeton knew her name, knew her story, and was hoping for answers. On September 19th, Dulce's family made a public plea through the media begging for her safe return. They also announced a $20,000 reward for any information. During that plea, Dulce's grandmother made a very direct statement to the community. She urged anyone with information to come forward and not to be afraid of law enforcement. Because in that area, there is a significant undocumented population. Authorities even made it clear that anyone who came forward with information would not be reported to ICE. They hoped that reassurance would encourage someone to speak up, but no one did. And honestly, that's where the case pretty much still stands today. Years later, there's still no answers. And like we see far too often in cases like this, the focus doesn't always stay where it should. Instead, the online community and sometimes even people locally begin pointing fingers, spreading rumors, dragging names through the mud. As the investigation continued, a lot of attention began to shift toward Noema. People started pointing fingers, questioning her decisions, her behavior, and even her emotions. Many couldn't get past the fact that Dulce, who was just 5 years old, and her 3-year-old brother were allowed to run ahead to the playground while Noema stayed back in the car. But not everyone parents the same, and in that moment, Noema clearly felt like it was safe. Still, that decision became a major focal point for criticism. People online and even within the community said some incredibly harsh things, but it didn't stop there. Others began scrutinizing how Noema was reacting, or in their eyes, how she wasn't reacting. People felt like she wasn't showing the level of emotion they expected from a mother with a missing child. And I think this is an important moment to pause, because it's really, really easy to say how we think we would react in a situation like this. But the truth is, until you're living in it, until you are waking up every single day in shock, in fear, in uncertainty, you don't actually know how you would respond. People process trauma very differently. Now, of course, there were also more serious accusations floating around. Some speculated that Noema could have been involved in Dulce's disappearance, suggesting things as extreme as human trafficking. And while that may sound unthinkable, it's also true that there are cases where parents have harmed or exploited their children, unfortunately. So investigators did take a closer look at Noema. She even appeared on Dr. Phil, where she was asked directly about why authorities had, at one point, considered her and her family as part of the investigation. According to Noema, one of the reasons was her emotional presentation, specifically that she doesn't cry publicly. And we know that there are entire units within law enforcement dedicated to behavioral analysis, so her demeanor was something that drew attention. During that interview, Noema explained that she doesn't know why she doesn't cry in front of others, that she doesn't even do so in front of her own parents. And again, that doesn't automatically mean guilt. It just means that she processes things differently. When asked about a polygraph test, Noema said that she did take one, but claimed she was never told the results. Throughout the interview, she comes across as very flat, very numb. Her answers are short, and she consistently denies any involvement. And for some people, that only fueled more suspicion. There were also moments during the search efforts that people latched onto. One that gets brought up often is that Noema was seen eating pizza during a search. People criticized her heavily for that, questioning how she could even eat when her child was missing. But context matters. Noema was actually pregnant at the time, and from what has been reported, this happened more than a full day after Dulce disappeared. Her eating this pizza was a whole 24 hours plus later, and at that point, it had been over 24 hours since she had ate. It's likely that people around her were encouraging her to take care of herself because she was carrying another baby. So when you look at all of this, you really have to take it for what it is. A grieving mother under a microscope, a community desperate for answers, and a case where even now so much remains unknown. I will let you form your own opinions when it comes to Noema and her behavior, but I do want to hear your thoughts because I know this is one of those cases that brings out a lot of mixed emotions and strong opinions. Now, another theory investigators looked into was whether someone known to the family could have taken Dulce. Because as we see in so many cases, the person responsible isn't always a stranger. It's often someone the victim knows, someone within their circle. But in this case, authorities came up empty. There were no strong suspects connected to the family. As the days turned into weeks and weeks into months, Dulce still hadn't been found. The reward for information continued to grow, starting at $20,000 and eventually increasing to $75,000 as the years passed. Investigators also released a sketch of a man they wanted to speak with in connection to the case. It's unclear exactly where that information came from, whether it was based on witness accounts or something more, but that man has never been identified. Since Dulce's disappearance, billboards have been placed throughout the area to keep her face and her story in the public eye. And the Federal Bureau of Investigation has included Dulce on its list of missing and kidnapped children, keeping her case active and visible on a national level. When it comes to theories, there are a few possibilities. One is that this was an opportunistic abduction. Someone could have seen two small children alone and made a split-second decision to act. Or someone could have already been at the park, waiting, looking for an opportunity. And when Dulce wandered out of sight, that opportunity presented itself. A question that comes up a lot is why Dulce? Why not take her brother too? But realistically, taking two children at once would be much more difficult, especially if this was carried out by a single person. There were reports of two men seen in the area, a black male and a Hispanic male, but that doesn't necessarily mean both were involved. Witnesses on the basketball court saw Dulce running, but they didn't hear anything, and that's important, because Dulce had been taught to scream, to fight, to make noise if someone tried to take her. So it raises questions. Was her mouth covered? Was she grabbed quickly? Or was she possibly lured, offered something, or convinced to go willingly? There's also the possibility that whoever took Dulce was someone she recognized, someone she trusted, which could explain why there wasn't a struggle or why no one heard anything. Another theory that circulated early on involved Dulce's biological father, especially since he had at one point talked about pursuing custody. But he was thoroughly investigated, and the FBI ultimately ruled him out as a suspect. In March of 2020, People.com reported something really unsettling. A series of cryptic letters and postcards began showing up at random locations. Places like a local library, an ice cream shop, even a race course. And what made it even stranger, these letters were postmarked from different locations. Some of them didn't make much sense at all. They were difficult to read, almost incoherent, but one letter sent to a race course stood out. It claimed that police needed to search a wooded area near a truck stop in Wethersfield, Ohio. And investigators took it seriously. They went out to a 76 truck stop and conducted a ground search, even bringing in canine units, but nothing was found. Then, just days later, another letter appeared, this one sent to an ice cream shop, and this time it mentioned Dulce by name. Now, of course, these letters could be completely fake. A cruel, disgusting attempt to insert someone into the investigation or to mislead it completely. But regardless, investigators followed up, because in a case like this, you can't afford to ignore anything. Still, nothing ever came from them. No new leads, no answers, and now, years later, there have been no additional letters and no major breakthrough in Dulce's case. Every year on her birthday, Dulce's family holds a vigil. They come together to celebrate her life and to hold on to hope that one day they'll finally get answers, that one day Dulce will come home. As of today, we are years removed from the day that she vanished, and her story is still very much alive. According to CBS News, investigators are now using artificial intelligence to try and develop new potential leads. But there hasn't been any updates that have been released beyond that. Dulce Marie Alavez is a Hispanic female who was just 5 years old at the time of her disappearance. She was approximately 3 feet 5 inches tall and weighed around 60 to 70 pounds. The last time she was seen, she was wearing a yellow t-shirt with an elephant on the front, black and white checkered pants with floral design, and white heeled sandals. She has black hair and brown eyes. If Dulce is still alive today, she would now be 12 years old, growing up potentially somewhere under a different name. If you or anyone you know has any information about Dulce's disappearance, please contact the Bridgeton Police Department at 856-451-0033, or you can reach out to the FBI at 1-800-225-5324. Even the smallest detail, the smallest tip, could be the missing piece to the puzzle. Crimesters, that is all that I have for this week's Missing Monday. Thank you so much for listening, and please share this episode. Someone somewhere knows something, and it just takes one person to come forward to blow a case wide open. Make sure that you're a part of my private Facebook group. You can find it by searching Crime with Holly podcast discussion group. In there, I share all pictures and information pertaining to the cases that I cover, and I encourage all members to share all things true crime. Also, follow me over on Instagram at CrimeAholly. And if you'd like more true crime content, you can find me at TikTok at crimewithholly.podcast. I will catch you all next time. But until then, always remember to be aware and take care. Bye-bye.